Hello, this is a pre-part of the Tory Eternity Delphi Council debriefings. So, I know last episode talking about the Living Land Edinos clans, my voice tended to be a little bit softer than Jay and Mark's, and I tried to adjust it for this one, but my problem currently is cicadas. So I am in the middle of cicada country for the 17-year and 13-year cicadas coming out, and they make so much noise that I can hear them above my air conditioning and when I have my headphones in. So I tried to do a noise dampener to get rid of the background noise so you can just hear me and not hear all of that crazy cricket noise, but a thousand times worse. Mark and Jay come in through a different audio input, so that's where the kind of the difference happened. So I tried to tweak it a little bit, worked a little bit better from what I've been able to see, but it's not perfect. They're still here next week. I'll try to adjust it, but just as a warning, if you can't hear me very clear or very loud and you crank up your volume once Mark and Jay start talking, it might hurt your ears. So I just wanted to do this warning and say that I apologize. I'm just trying to get rid of the obnoxious cicada background, as well as you just saw here. I try to keep Mars away, but sometimes he jumps up and he loves knocking my microphone, and getting it away from my mouth tends to also make me not sound as loud as I could. So having said that, please enjoy our Delphi Council debriefing. We have a good one, like all of them are, and until next time, hope you have fun in your own Cosmiverse. Hello, this is the Tory Eternity Delphi Council debriefings, where the storm has a name. We are your hosts, Lehman, Mark, and Jay, and today we will be talking about the Nile Empire and how to bring in the various cultures and themes of the Nile Empire into your Tory Eternity games. We didn't have any emails, but we do encourage you to email us at torgdcd@gmail.com, and we'll answer any questions you have. We'll read whatever your comments are. We might comment on those comments, etc. So our last episode, we went deep into the various Living Land Edinos clans. And then, but for a Nile Empire, there's not that type of structure. In Living Land, you have a lower social axiom, as well as different areas of North and Central America that have been invaded, whereas Pharaoh Mobius for the Nile Empire specifically took over one big area, and it has expanded off of that instead of having lots of little things. So it's not quite as spread out. The cultures are a little more along an even keel, to say, but there are different aspects of it that we want to bring out. So the things that we'll be talking about today is kind of the 1920s to 30s mindset, especially dealing with gangster and mob culture. We'll also get into the prevalent religion of a non-quite historical ancient Egypt religion known as Amatism. And then we'll also talk about how things change, and that when you introduce pulp heroes and villains that wear masks. So that's kind of where we're going with. So we'll go ahead and start off with gangster mob mentality, culture, and things like that. So Mark, what do you have to say about the mobster of 1920s feels, 30s feels with Nile Empire?
Well, so Nile Empire, of all the cosms, I think Nile Empire is my favorite. It's got the action hero mentality, the pulp hero mentality. And with the mobsters, it's speakeasies and mobsters, you know, goons running around. Everybody's got a pistol under their coat. And if you don't, you know, you can get one. The running guns, gin joints, that kind of thing. It's just gumshoes, flappers, reporters everywhere. It very, very, you know, the roaring 20s, I mean, is a great way to look at it and to say, yeah, I can see how that would be, you know, the moniker to put on it. Bringing it in to Torg Eternity, I think you almost have that there's a gin joint on every corner kind of mentality. Chases end up running over, you know, Indiana Jones style with the trucks going through and running over the vegetable carts, people diving out of the way at the last cabbages. Minute kind of thing. Huh?
I said, my cabbages.
Yeah, my cabbages. and just, you know, truly over the top dramatic hero villain kind of stuff. With the mobster approach, you've got, you know, neighborhood, everything breaks into a neighborhood mentality, and it's more from inside the cities. You've got neighborhoods and territories and regions, and the mobsters break it out into, you know, very small, you know, they're big on honor and they're big on that kind of thing, but it's mob honor versus, you know, what, you know, Captain America kind of honor. I love the idea from a Torg Eternity perspective that the mob isn't necessarily, they're not on the side of Mobius, but they're also not on the side of the Delphi Council. They just want, you know, they want to do business. And what's good for business is, you know, keeping everybody out of our business. And they want to do what they're going to do. And if they start encroaching in Mobius's territory, he's going to crack down on them. If they start encroaching on the Delphi Council's territory, they're going to crack down on them. And sometimes we got three sides of the triangle looking at each other and everybody's shooting at everybody. Rocketeer's a great, there's a scene in Rocketeer that's really, really good about that, where the Rocketeer has been fighting the mob and the Nazis are coming on board on shore. And then one of the cops is that they're hiding behind a car with one of the mobsters, and they're both shooting at the Nazis who are coming on, and they stop for a second, they look at each other, and the mob goon goes, yeah, but I'm an American mafioso, and he starts shooting, and they both shoot back, or I'm an American thug, or something like, I don't remember how he said it, but he's, and they both turned and kept shooting, fighting a common enemy. You can see a lot of that, you know, the enemy of my enemy is my friend kind of mentality in the streets of Cairo or wherever you happen to put your Nile Empire cosm. And the mob goons, they, you know, you can work that as old school, you know, respect. They're big on respect, and it doesn't have to be, it's just, you know, you respect them, they respect you, you work it out kind of thing. And whose side are they on? They're on the side of profit.
Jay, your thoughts on gangsters, mobs, etc. for the Nile Empire?
Well, it's a pretty big topic. it depends where you are in the Nile Empire. There's Cairo, and then there's everywhere else.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, in Cairo, the overgovernor, the insidious Wuhan, has been forced to allow uncorruptible police there and actually, you know, send people to prison that are caught. Whereas everywhere else in the empire, it's completely corrupt, and whatever kind of mob presence there is basically own the police and are really just kind of extended tools of Mobius's empire in some ways. But in Cairo, it's a different story. Also, because Wuhan is rarely there, he doesn't actually want to run the place. It's really kind of run by these different syndicates. And I think the nice thing about the mob in the Nile Empire is it gives you a totally different layer of games that you can run, because if you're fighting pulp villains, that tends to be very action-oriented or possibly very puzzle-oriented. If you're fighting shock troopers and things like that, that also is very action-oriented. But a lot of the time, the interactions you have with the mob tend to be more social interactions, because if you just go in guns blazing, it's probably going to go poorly for you in the long term, because the mob might rule the city, or at least the part of the city that you're in, and they're going to actively go after you and make things worse. And in Cairo, the Imperial, like the shock trooper presence, that they don't care. It's the worst shock troopers in the entire realm. So they don't care what the mob does. Mob got carte blanche to do pretty much anything to you. So a lot of times it's more about not causing too much of a scene. There might be some brawls at some dance clubs or gin joints, but ultimately you don't want things to go too crazy. And I kind of like how there's also different sort of strata levels of status, which you can explore in the Nile Empire. Because that, you know, you have your over governors and you have the wealthy producers at Silver Screens, the movie producers at Dreamland, like all of these like high and mighty high society types. Then you've got like these pulp villains and heroes, which may secretly be some of those. Then you've got this level of like the ordinary workers, the Joes, the reporters and everything. And then you have this under, like, city seedy element. So players can actually go and involve themselves in a lot of different strata in the same adventure. And the one thing I guess to remember about the mob is, A, even if they are aligned with you at a purpose right now, they are not nice people. The example mobs, like in Cairo, it's human trafficking, it's drugs, it's prostitution, this extortion, murder, all of that. They're all doing that. So even if they're being friendly with you for now, remember, they're not good people. Same goes with the ghost syndicates in Pan Pacifica. But you might need to work with them occasionally, which is tougher in the Nile Empire because of the law of morality. These mobsters are almost all going to be evil, right? So you really have to watch out. If you've ever seen the cartoon for The Tick, there's one episode where he has to try to infiltrate into this like society of gangsters. And they're like, oh yeah, prove that you're evil. Eat this kitten. And he's like, no, I can't do it. That's just wrong. So I see a lot of that coming up too. The other thing to remember is this is not Egypt of like that we're used to. Mm-hmm. At the time, like after the 3 month mark or so, most of the city has transformed. So these are people who were core earth Egyptians in Cairo anyway, that have transformed to become Terra Egyptians, mm-hmm. or just Terra citizens in general. So their entire culture and the way they do things has turned more into like a Humphrey Bogart movie. So I usually tend to run the Nile Empire much more film noir style. There's a lot of, you know, the gin joints, because as Mark mentioned, there are a ton of gin joints in Cairo. Even though apparently alcohol was legalized in the Nile Empire, Wuhan put an extraordinary tax on it in Cairo. So it's still smuggled there all the time to have these gin joints and detectives walking around in trench coats, even though it really doesn't make sense to be wearing a trench coat in the middle of the desert. But you still have these things that don't really make sense when you think about it, but it's because they're from this other reality and they're emulating the things from Terra mixed with a little bit of the Egypt that never was. So I think there's a lot of places you can go. I mean, we could go further about the specific crime families and how they all interact. But to me, it's just adding that extra sort of social dynamic to it.
Yeah, and you did bring up a really good point that it might be beneficial to kind of reiterate and expand on with the people of the realm of the Nile Empire on, you know, that's been transformed from core Earth originally were people who were living or visiting or whatever. They were in that area at the time. So in the beginning, Cairo in Egypt, it's not like all of a sudden they were transformed into Europeans or Americans or anything. So just like people, humans aren't transformed into elves when they get transformed to Isle, they're not, you know, transformed. So you still are going to have a lot of Middle Eastern ancestry and stuff like that, but their culture has changed. So physically, if without taking into fashion differences, physically they're going to look similar to what is there today. They're going to have those 1920s and 30s outfits and stuff, and then their acting and how they present and things like that are going to be very close to the 1920s, 30s. That's where the gangster and you can look at old silent movies and stuff on that type of thing. And then their religion is all weird because then that's been, and we'll talk about that in a little bit.
We'll
that
get there.
Has been overlapped with the Amatism. So you can take all of those sources that we talked about and use those as inspiration, but don't forget to change it and make it a little bit different, because the Nile Empire just isn't like the mobs and stuff might act like Chicago under Al Capone, but they're not. It's Cairo is not Chicago under Al
Capone. It's very different.
It's a different thing. And it even states in the book that, as you were saying, with Wuhan, the insidious Wuhan being the overgovernor of that area, it even says he operates similar to a mob boss. So even as an overgovernor, that's kind of his mentality, you know, as a part of Mobius's empire. And then you have these mob bosses doing their thing also, and their, you know, crime families and stuff. So it's a very interesting thing to think about, and so make it a bit unique. You can bring those elements out, but also I would highly suggest for game masters and players to make it unique to fit the Nile Empire and not just have it copy paste from other things that you might have seen and stuff. So you know, that's pretty good. Let's move on, as just talked about Amatism. So let's talk about the religion, the Amatism, the not quite ancient Egyptian religion, but similar, and how that might affect how things work in the Nile Empire. So, Mark, your thoughts on Amatism and that?
So, polytheistic, you've got the traditional, well, I say traditional, you've got a bunch of Egyptian gods and goddesses that rule or are involved in this. And it's a lot like approaching almost any other polytheistic pantheon, where you have different deities involved and they all have their little sphere of influence. In this case, animals are a big deal. Each of the gods and goddesses have their own associated animal. And so you get to play with the animal, when you're writing your missions or your adventures, the animal themes, if you're doing something that's for example Sebek, if you're doing Sebek stuff, alligators should be all over the place, because alligator I believe is that Sebek's animal, right? Ra's a sparrow. You can find this stuff on page 43 I think of the Nile Empire source book. But those animals become primary themes in that, and they can be the clues that your Storm Knights need, especially if they're lost and they don't know what to do and they play an idea card or something along those lines. You can have a hawk swoop down and give them Horus's you know, information or a clue to that moves them along the path, because the Horus is in opposition to Anubis on this mission, and you knew that because you put it in your whatever. The animals can play a big part. The idea that there are really kind of four basic power fluctuations within Amatism, within the society is at large, that kind of they're always in I guess ascending and descending. Sometimes one's more in truth, order, law, and power, and essentially you can look at which one is primary in this interaction. And if you wanted to, you could really step every NPC, you could set them up as this guy's more interested in power and law is secondary, and he didn't care about order at all, and the truth is kind of, you know, the ends justify the means, so whatever. And you could build your profile or your personality for your NPCs that way, and figure out how to play them based on how they view things in the setting. While this is not, it's a religion, so you're going to have your miracles that show up from, you can energize them from the various deities that power them. But it's, as Liam opened with, this is not the religion of Earth's Egypt. You can draw inspiration and a lot of art and a lot of direction from what actual Egypt used, but this is the Egypt from Terra, and this is the Amatism from Terra, and so it's flavored very differently. You've got the weird science thing going on there. You've got the law of action, the law of drama, driving a lot of stuff in there. You've got all of the different world laws that kind of drive the stuff behind it. But at the end of the day, it's still your basic polytheistic pantheon of gods and goddesses that are involved, and they're there. You can have them, but they're kind of aloof. So you can have them get involved when you need them, and then they go away, and that's not a big deal. If you don't want to, you can have them put, it's as much or as little as you want to put in there, because this is not like the cyber papacy where religion is like it permeates everything. It's not. The only time really I would say that the Amat gets into like that level of involvement is when you start dealing with temples and the Amatist priests and anybody who's deep into the mysticism or math magic or whatever they're using. Then you kind of have to have that backing there, because that's where they're the astrology and all the rest of it, that's where they're drawing their power from, and they're pointing to those things. So you maybe need a little flavor or an understanding of that so that you can pull it into the game. But if you don't want to have it there, you're just like, oh yeah, he's a modest priest, and you move on. Up to you.
Jay, your thought on Amatism and how it works with the Nile Empire.
I think one of the big things game masters need to remember as far as Amatism goes is that the Nile Empire is behind only the Living Land and is the second highest. I think it's the second highest spirit axiom. It's either tied with Ororosh or is two higher than Ororosh. I can't remember offhand. So I might disagree a little bit with Mark that I think because it's such a high axiom, you can almost always find something of the gods around, maybe a sign or, you know, nothing major necessarily. And it is kind of like the cyber papacy in that Amatism is the state religion and any other religion is illegal. So there's plenty of Muslims and Christians and Jews. And then further south into Africa, people with other faiths that are technically illegal. So they have to kind of hide everything that they're doing. But it's an interesting religion too, because it was created in back on Terra by Mobius's father, Amat-Ra. That's why it's called Amatism. So it's kind of funny in that it's, I guess it's the real religion, but you know, it was like actually created by somebody. and then Mobius has brought it back. So the source book mentions that Mobius has spent a lot of his possibility energy to keep increasing the spirit axiom higher and higher. Which actually makes the Nile Empire, I think, probably one of the most balanced realities in the game. Like, all of its axioms are in that kind of, like, 18 to 20-ish range. Mm-hmm. Like, Core Earth and Pan Pacifica, you know, their tech and social are good, but then everything else is like, bleh, right? So Nile is kind of the one realm that you can run it where you could do, like, a little bit of everything. Not as much in the way of psionics, but everything else, you could pretty much do everything. And one thing about it being... One thing that I've always found interesting about it, and it's like the one thing I've latched onto since it was brought in, is the fact that there is no Osiris in the Pantheon. He got killed a while back, right? So, but it does mention that there are, aside from the 9 major gods, which are listed, there are still other minor gods. So you could still pull in other ancient Egyptian deities that would fit for your campaign that aren't listed here, but know that their roles might be slightly different. They might not necessarily be the god of the same thing, but that actually gives you a lot of power as a GM to be a little more creative in how you do things. But as a polytheistic religion, I found it interesting that they mentioned that if you are a priest or a high priest, you don't tend to just worship one specific god. You pray to all of them, unless you're like a temple guardian, it seems, because they would probably be more dedicated to their one particular god. But anyone who just has like the Miracles perk or the Hemnetjer perk, you know, you can call to any of the gods whenever it's appropriate to you. You're not really specifically focused on one of them. Players might want to focus on one. But I think it could be more flavorful if, like, an NPC priest, you hear them pray to one god one day and you hear them pray to another god a different day for even a different, or, you know, the same day for just different effects. That can add a little bit more extra flavor as well. So there's a lot going on. The sacred animals that Mark talked about are always fun, too, because players, if there's any characters from the Nile Empire, you should always let them know that killing one of these sacred animals is bad and you'll get cursed. But it's funny if no one from the group is from the Nile Empire. I don't inform them of this information, right? they can find out on their own. And the one thing that can kind of be a little icky or weird for people is the fact that when Mobius first invaded, and there was that massive axiom wash, it created a mind control effect that made people very susceptible to propaganda. And that, not necessarily the transformations, but that is what caused so many people in Egypt to convert from whatever religion it was that they worshipped to Ahmatism. Because we've seen in other realms, like, you can be in the cyber papacy and not be a cyber Catholic. You could still be a regular Catholic or whatever you were before. Transforming doesn't always change your religion, much like it doesn't change your species. But in this case, people that were in Egypt proper, the vast majority of them were converted kind of against their will, and I guess the gods were fine with that, but, you know, we kind of let that slide. But then whatever is going on the rest of the continent, it didn't happen so easily. So I'm sure there's also Ahmatist missionaries running around converting people, ensuring that it's the state religion. So you can almost go cyber papacy levels with it if you want, but in my experience, most people like to do the Nile Empire a little bit more like fun and freewheeling, and just have the gods kind of in the background until you need them. So you just have to kind of see how your players will react to that and how you feel about it.
If I may, before you run in, Lehman, looking at the Cosm axioms, Nile Empire and Isle are tied at 18 as the second highest. Okay. And this is interesting to me. Cyberpapacy is at 16.
Yeah.
I would have thought they would have been higher given what they are, but they're not. They're too low or tied with the Rorsch, the lowest being Tharkold, of course.
I'll
add to what Jay said on the day one, and this is on page 8 in the Nile Empire. it specifically states that Mobius, as well as Staley, he put pylons that he had invented and manufactured and spread them out the initial invasion area. And those were the things that kind of made people susceptible to mind control or hypnosis or some weird science thing that you probably saw a little spinning disc, you know, right. happens and people's eyes glaze over, that most affected by them converted to emotism. It does say it didn't stick to all people. And then afterwards, as the realm started expanding, he didn't have enough to keep that up, but there's still a very large core group that had switched over to emotism. Other ways that I would bring in that this is different, and while we all love Indiana Jones and the Mummy and the various pulp things that inspire the Nile Empire, this emotism twist is going to be a lot of things that you see in the Nile Empire are going to have that Egyptian or faux Egyptian type facade on them. So your Great Pyramid isn't going to look like what it looks now. It's going to have nice smooth sides. It's going to have big hieroglyphics on it. Even if that's not what it was, that's what Mobius wants it. He wants to promote that. You're going to have, you know, well-maintained Egyptian, ancient Egyptian-like statues, but they'll be modern statues. They'll have paint on them. They might even have shock troopers in their hieroglyphics. You know, when you are riding, and instead of just the soldier hieroglyphic or the little soldier picture, you know, they're going to be carrying machine guns or things like that. So it'll be a little different. On the military tanks, they might have an Ankh or the Eye of Ra on it, or, you know, the same with their planes. So you, it might be nice as a game master to bring in those to show that it is similar, but it's not just 1930s, 40s Germany. You know, it's a Egyptian... Yeah. themed type thing that is very
I spent a pronounced. Lot of time on my Roll 20 tokens in scrubbing out swastikas and replacing them with Ankhs or Eyes of Horus or whatever.
So that is a something to think about. It sounds like from what Mark had brought up with Osiris, the myth of Osiris was that he was kind of killed and ripped apart in various pieces, and Isis went around and collected them. And basically on Terra, or at least with the Emotism branch of Egyptian faux religion, that he wasn't reassembled and didn't become a god of the underworld and the afterlife. So that's kind of missing. Also, while it's not as firm as Classic Torg used the term inclination for their Nile Empire, which meant whenever anybody was in the Nile Empire, they had to be good or evil. There was no middle ground whatsoever. Your inclination required you to be. And then there were certain things like the ninjas that had to be evil. And then there were other things like if you had any dark Isle corruption, then you were evil. And if you had any Isle light stuff, the honor is what they said, honor, then you had to be good. It was a, you know, clear cut, everybody is good in Europe. Good or evil, good or bad, there's no middle ground whatsoever. It's not quite that bad in Torg Eternity, but it still is. Most people are going to find themselves on the I'm a good guy or I'm a bad guy. Like Mark said, and Jay, when you're dealing with the mob, they might be helping you, and that might be a gray area, but they themselves are bad and evil. And so when you look at the deities of Emotism, they're going to be very similar. you might be, say, praying or invoking a miracle to Serket, the goddess of death, doesn't mean that if she answers you, she's good. It could mean that you just need that prayer from that deity at this time. So you can...
doesn't mean you're evil because you called on her or Horus to do something either.
Right.
That's
right.
Just, as Jay was pointing out, each god has a sphere of influence, and right. You pray to the god you need when you need something from that god, and that's in the that's why you go visit the temples too. Here's my tribute to the god. I need to get a blessing on my cows.
Right.
Whatever it is, that's how it's transactional. That's how it works.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So everybody is good or evil. Good or bad, but that doesn't mean you have to always do the good thing or the bad thing, or only ally with the good people or the bad people. That's where your interactions are where the gray area comes in, not that you yourself are in that middle ground. So that's something that I think is interesting as well. So then, talking about good and bad, let's go into the various heroes, the masks, the heroes and villains that wear masks, how they can interact in the Nile Empire, and how they're pulp heroes and not necessarily superheroes. So, Mark, you want to start us off with that?
This is where I really lean into the pulp hero thing in the Nile Empire. I love everything about heroes and villains in the Nile Empire. Those of you who play Living Land characters who have, I won't say that you're not dumb, you're just a little slower than other folks. When you finally realize that there's the law of masks is a thing, because like a lot of guys, a lot of characters walk into the Nile Empire and they're like, okay, let me put on a mask because I get a +2 because masks are a thing. That is a real thing in the Nile Empire. They work. They have power. The Living Land people, I have a Living Land character that walked in there and realized that this was a thing, and he became the Hilton Smasher because you have to, if you put a mask on, you must have a superhero name. That's the rule. And he took a towel and he tore a piece of the towel off, tied it around his head. This is how it works? Okay. Well, they said, well, who are you? He's a Smasher. So lean into that. And that's the beautiful thing about the Nile Empire is that it's from the age of four color comic books and over the top and dramatic and larger than life kind of stuff. And when you put on the mask, if nobody saw you put the mask on, they don't know who you are, and you get to tell them who you are, and you get to have this alternate secret identity that is bright lines of good and evil, and you know, haha, here I am, and all of this. It's so much fun to be able to pull that off. And then you have the Pan Pacifica characters who are just scratching their heads going, you walked into the closet. There's only one way in. And you came out and said you were somebody else. And then the funniest part about it is that the Nile Empire character is standing like, what are you talking about? Bob's not back yet. We have the Hilton Smasher here. Where's Bob? And it's just because it works. And it's a lot of fun. And for the other characters, the Pan Pacific characters, the Eilish characters, and everybody else is going, what just happened? You got to kind of lean into that and say, okay, well, that's part of the Nile Empire. I'm just going to let it go. Because for the Nile Empire characters, they're legitimately going to – you can waste a lot of time at the table with the and doing it a couple times is fine because it's fun, but you could waste a lot of time at the table doing the whole, I saw you walk in, and then you walked out, and the only change was you put that piece of cloth on your face. I don't know what you're talking – and the Nile Empire characters, honest to God, don't know what you're talking about. Because it's their secret identity and it works on everybody they know except for you. And then all they have to do is continue to deny it, because the reporters and all the people who are typically going to dig into that stuff go, oh yeah, okay, thanks. And they move on and they accept the simple explanation. So from a metagame standpoint, you kind of got to let that go for your Nile Empire characters, because it just, that's how they, that's their life, that's the way it works. The villains, oh my gosh, the villains are just as fun, because they get to be four color too. They get to be larger than life and dramatic and over the top, and there's no such thing as too coincidental. That's just how it happens, because it's just the fact that, you know, there's two more bullets in the top drawer of the guy's bureau. Why would those be in his bedroom? They just, well, you, because you need two more bullets, and that's where they are, because that's where he stores his gun, whatever. You know, those over the top things that just happen to coincidentally be there. That's how the Nile Empire works, and that works for villains as well as the heroes. You get to have these great backstories that work into stuff that, you know, Joker and the Batman, that's, I mean, that's big, but don't do old school Golden Age, not modern. It's just so much fun to have that interplay, because you get the constant loops. The villains are never dead, and the heroes never get killed either, unless they do. And then their ward shows up to take the mantle on and carry on. Right. So it's just, it's so much fun to be able to take that law of masks and run with it, that law of inevitable return and that law of morality, and watch them come together in the Nile Empire that provides all of that action and that stuff going on. And never GMs never ever go, well, that's just, they'll know that's too much. That would never happen. It will in the Nile Empire.
Jay, your thoughts on the masks, heroes, and villains?
So I mentioned that I like to run things a little more noir style. You know, so things are slow. There's saxophone music. You're in a gin joint filled with cigarette smoke. Maybe there's a lounge singer in the background. There's a whole bunch of guys with fedoras eyeing you, massaging their guns or their knives. But then you can have the door smash open and a guy in a mask just jumps in covered in light or something. Yeah. Shooting beams out of his fists, and it can just completely change the mood of a scene completely. So I really like having a juxtaposition against the Imperial troopers, or the gangsters, or even like the religious zealots that you might encounter, or even like traps and temples that you might be exploring, like an ancient pyramid or something, and then just have some super flashy pulp hero or villain come in and just really start hamming up the joint. You should go all out as a GM with anything that has the word pulp in front of it. Give it your like most annoying voice, or just a loud voice, depending. Make them very memorable. One thing that I, going back to the law of morality, one of the caveats, like the way the Nile Empire works, and this is one of the things that can rub players the wrong way sometimes, sometimes you have to really explain to them how it works and why it works here, is that if you're fighting a pulp villain, especially in Cairo, and that villain surrenders, you should apprehend that villain and take him to the police. Sure, he'll probably escape. Or
no.
Wuhan
he
will pay
will
his bail.
Escape.
Yeah, something is going to happen, but that is what you do. Okay? Likewise, that means when the villains are going to kill the players, the player characters, rather, they don't. They capture you and put you in an easily escapable doomsday device, right? That is the contract between you.
That's right.
But then I have personally one player in my group. He was playing a Core Earth mercenary, like Blackwater type. And this, like, he played him as like a friggin' psycho Aussie, like, just full auto all the time kind of guy with like a huge drinking problem. But it's very memorable. But the thing is, he would always, like, if he killed a villain, he's like, no, I want to like chainsaw his head off. So I don't want him coming back. And I'm just like, A, that's not what you do here. B, this could be an Operation Eris agent, so you're not supposed to be just like chainsawing people's heads off anyway. And C, it's not going to matter. The law of inevitable return means he'll come back somehow if it's time to come back. So just make sure your players know why these things exist. Like, don't let them think that you're punishing them by not letting them, like, take out the bad guy. Sometimes they could feel it's cheap if the GM just keeps saving them. So you got to let them know this is part of the reality. This is, like, the other half of the coin for you guys getting all these super powerful possibilities and being able to spend two at a time and having extra destiny cards. Like, this is the trade-off, right? Even still, though, I still don't like to always use the law of inevitable return. I like to use it sparingly. First of all, because the players can trigger it with a Cosm card that we've discussed previously. So if you're always doing it anyways, then they don't get the chance. Plus, it means you just anyone that you haven't brought back, you could still bring back months later in the future if you really need to. So you always have the option. And sometimes it's even better because you know how Mark was talking about the hero goes down and his ward picks up the armor? It works just as well for villains too, right? So they're like, no,
I will avenge my father.
Yeah, it's like... So yeah, there's a lot going on with the heroes and villains. It does kind of depend where you are again. So it's kind of like Cairo is where the highest concentration of them is by design of Mobius. So he has all of the crime going on there so that all of the heroes are there so he can kind of keep his eye on them. But they are all over the place, and there's plenty of like homegrown heroes down in the Congo and like all the other areas where the Empire has been expanding. So I imagine the further the Empire expands, the more other heroes just sort of pop up that have nothing to do with the Mystery Men or know anything about what's going on. And that's sort of my last thing is we always talk about how these are four-color heroes and they're pulp heroes, not superheroes. Just be careful as the GM, because once you start getting into the high betas and the gammas, they really do start turning into superheroes. So their power level can get kind of crazy. So just be careful and kind of use moderation on the amount of powers you give to a character. I find it's better to err on giving them better stats and less powers, because if you just give them a ton of powers, everyone starts to kind of feel a little bit samey. Mm-hmm. It's best to just give them like maybe two or three at most. Well, that's just my suggestion.
Yeah, I'll agree with that. And I love, and I've used legacy villains where the party has taken out a major villain. And then later, his daughter appeared wearing the mantle of that villain. And it was one group of mine took out the original. And the second group of mine is the one that encountered the daughter taking up the mantle. And then when they were trying to do research or figure out who this villain was, they kept getting paper, you know, newspaper, past articles and TV clips or, you know, propaganda, whatever, and it was always talking about the father. So they were like really confused. Is this real, you know, what's happening with this? It's a man here, it's a woman here, what's going on? And it just added to it, and it brought something new instead of just that guy came back, which can be good. I'm not trying to say don't do it. I'm just saying that there's other ways to do it, or a lieutenant taking over, or things like that. Also, yeah, when you start going in the expansion of the Nile Empire, that's where you could get pulpy type, even just with super skill or super attribute, maybe with an animal companion, you get a Tarzan or a Shadow or or was it the Phantom? I think the Phantom was one of those comic pulp heroes.
Slam Evil.
Yep.
That... Or the, you know, those type of things where you can get out more in the jungles and areas when you start getting closer to Central Africa. But, yeah, there's just a lot of pull powers out there. Be sure, as Game Masters, I completely believe in reskinning. So if you're reading something and the effect is what you want, but the little fluff of it's a bit different. Change the fluff. Make it allow that thing to happen to fit a character a little bit if it doesn't quite exactly work with how it's written. But there is a lot of good things, and when we're talking about pulp heroes or the four color heroes, we're talking about what now would be considered street level heroes for the most part. Not your Superman, not your Thor. We're talking like I said, the Shadow, the Phantom, the other
Hawkeye. Batman at best.
Yeah, Batman, old original Batman, kind of Daredevil-ish at best, where you are doing that type of thing. So hopefully that has inspired you to look in the Nile Empire, which does tend to be, not everyone, it tends to be a fan favorite. And we do heavily recommend movies, like I said before, Indiana Jones, The Mummy. Mark brought up the Rocketeer. You can look at the Shadow, The Phantom, other things like that. But also remember there's other aspects going on with it. Look at the faux Egyptian pantheon, sprinkle that in, do the Al Capone mob boss type thing or character.
Humphrey Bogart.
That. The Humphrey Bogart. Look at some...
As horrible as the movie is, Gods of Egypt can be used purely for the background visuals.
I don't think it's that bad.
Or even with the weird science and how it can mimic some what happens to be real stuff now, and even when I was younger, it wasn't real, would be like Dick Tracy, where because he had the watch that he could talk to. That really wasn't a thing back in the 80s or 90s, and now your Apple or Samsung or whatever watch, you can, talk to people on it, hook it up to your phone, or some even have their own SIM cards for it.
Hook it up to your Zuzu.
Yes, hook it up to your Zuzu. So you can look at that for kind of the detective gumshoe type character as well. So again, we hope this episode has made some thoughts percolate in your mind, given you some ideas, refreshed you for the Nile Empire. Do write us at torgdcd@gmail.com. We always love to read your letters. We'll answer questions. We'll comment on your comments, etc. And until next time, we hope you have fun in your own Cosmverse. Bye.